All right, welcome back, and joining us now is Eric Peters of ericpetersautos.com or epautos.com. And it's always great to have Eric on. I wanted to get him on before the traveling begins on the holidays. And earlier today, thank you for joining us, Eric. Appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, David. And let's enjoy our travel while we can still travel.
That's right. Yeah, earlier today, I talked about, I got some articles from just before Thanksgiving in 2020. NPR and all these other people trying to scare everybody to death. Don't go see grandma. You'll die, you know, and all the rest of this stuff. And make sure if you rent a car that you wipe everything down. The fear and the paranoia, we must not forget that. You know, we must not forget how they scared people to death so they can't do it again.
Well, not only must we not forget, I think we also shouldn't forget they've yet to apologize for any of that.
That's right.
To acknowledge that, you know, assuming good intentions, that they were bamboozled and fooled, mm-hmm. and to acknowledge that and to say, gosh, you know, we're really sorry that we involve ourselves in this and that we helped to enable this, and this must never happen again. And until they apologize, I'm not going to forgive them for it.
That's right. Well, you know, it's always been a rule of thumb for the government that they would make two mistakes rather than admit to one, right? But I don't think this is a mistake. I think it was malicious. And, you know, I think that they really do want to take everything from us so that we own nothing and we go nowhere and we have no life. I really do think that they all signed on to that World Economic Forum agenda. And
without self-evident.
Yeah.
We 2 months into the, you know, the so-called pandemic, cough. You know, at that point, you know, initially I would be willing to cut them a little bit of slack because this thing just sort of happened out of nowhere. And yeah, okay, maybe we should err on the side of caution. But within a couple of months, it was apparent, clear, factual, that this thing was being hyped, it was being exaggerated, and that there were malicious lies. You know, you and I have talked repeatedly in the past about the way they endlessly, hourly talked about the cases, mm-hmm. not explaining to people that there's a big difference between a so-called case, i.e. a positive test, and somebody admitted to a hospital, let alone somebody who actually died.
Yes.
But they wanted to conflate those two things to convey the impression that every day thousands of people were essentially dying from this sickness, which was a blatant lie, and they knew it was a lie.
Yeah.
So it begs the question, why did they lie? And as you say, they did it because they're malicious.
That's right. Yeah, Kerry Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for inventing the PCR thing, said you can find anything if you magnify it enough. And of course, they were magnifying it by 1.1 trillion times with a number of cycles.
You know, right now we're seeing the same kind of thing manifest with regard to the climate change hysteria, which I've written about. They're trying to conflate this idea of a fractional increase in the fraction of the percent of the Earth's atmosphere that is CO2, which is 0.04% roughly, that somehow this tiny, tiny constituent background non-reactive gas, if there's a slight fractional increase in that amount, let alone whether that's caused by motor vehicles, somehow that's going to cause a catastrophic climate crisis. And it's as absurd as trying to pathologize a virus that didn't kill 99.8% of the otherwise healthy non-elderly population.
Yeah, that's right. As a matter of fact, I saw this coming because I've been fighting with them over the climate thing, and they were covering up their data and lying about it. We got their emails, but of course, I came up with this t-shirt here, MacGuffin. I'll just plug this shamelessly here. Because I talk about Hitchcock and the MacGuffin. You know, he says it doesn't really matter what the MacGuffin is. It's what everybody is chasing, right? It's just whatever motivates people. And so we've seen, you know, global freezing, global warming. We've seen a pandemic. All these things are to motivate people. It doesn't really matter. And so, you know, we created this t-shirt so people can wear that. And people say, what's a MacGuffin?
The common denominator here is fear.
Yeah.
You know, they have weaponized fear. Of course, that's something that governments have specialized in from time immemorial. Get people scared, and as Mencken put it, they will be clamorous to be led to safety. And that's ultimately what this is all about, even if safety means their encirclement and their impoverishment.
That's right. But it was so important, wasn't it? That really, cars really were our lifeline in 2020. Because otherwise they would have really had us in their little 15-minute city or less, right? They would have had us locked in our living rooms if it hadn't been for the cars. And even then, on Thanksgiving, they were trying to scare people away from using the cars because that was the lifeline. They want to get rid of cars because in that way they can control wherever you go with the planes, trains, and buses that are left or, you know, if you don't have a private automobile. And if it's you have to rent the automobile by the ride, they got you there, too. You know, so it's about making us dependent and having us under complete control. That's what getting rid of cars is ultimately going to mean.
Sure. So much easier to lock down the populace when you don't even have to literally lock them down. You can just sort of throw a switch and prevent their vehicle from being operational. And at that point, they're effectively locked down, you know, and it isn't even necessary to do it for the car per se. What they want is a centrally managed form of power that is entirely under their control. So they can meter the electricity. They can turn it off. They can turn it on. Mm-hmm. So even if you could control the car, what use is it to you if they control the electricity?
That's right. Yeah, and talk about that. You know, with Thomas Massey put this thing together to try to stop this kill switch thing. And he couldn't even get support amongst the GOP for that. What does that tell us?
Well, you know, I think it's because they succeeded in framing it. And it was brilliant. Again, I have to give these authoritarian leftists credit for the way they frame things. They put it in terms of an impaired driving switch technology. In other words, they conveyed the idea that this is about preventing people who are drunk or otherwise impaired, whether by alcohol or drugs, from driving vehicles. And it's very difficult for anybody to oppose that. Because after all, are you for drunk driving? Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, when was the last time you beat your wife? It's the same kind of an argument. Of course, Massey took the time to deconstruct it and pointed out that the actual language in the government decree talks about driver performance, which is a very different thing from impairment. You know, what they want to do is to characterize your driving if it's outside of the parameters that the government decides are acceptable. That's got nothing to do with whether you're drunk or high or whatever it is. Simply, if the government decides that the way you drive is outside of the parameters that the government likes, that will constitute effectively impairment. And then that will be the pretext for controlling your driving by basically, in effect, the car will pull itself over. You don't need cops anymore.
Yeah.
The car will simply stop working. And, you know, I also point out to people, this isn't something that's coming in 2026. It's already here. It's been here for a number of years. Practically every new car that's available right now has one degree or another of the foundational technology that is going to comprise the whole system when this thing's fully enabled, already embedded in it. And it's just a matter of turning it all on.
Yeah, that's right. And you go back and you look at it, you know, we've talked many times about how with surveillance and control, they can automatically issue you a ticket. They can automatically increase your insurance rates and everything because, hey, you stopped too quickly or you took that turn too quickly or this or that. You know, not even about the speed, but they can micromanage everything about the way that you're driving. And it's like, well, I don't like the way you did that or this. And so I'm going to give you a ticket. I'm going to raise your insurance rates. Now they can just cut the thing off, right?
Yeah, the idea is to make driving as unpleasant as possible, in addition to making it impossible to drive, so that you just won't want to. And if people think that this is exaggerated, talk to a guy who drives commercially. Talk to anybody who drives a big rig.
Yeah.
These guys are micromanaged to the nth degree. If you've ever wondered why, when you're out on the interstate and there's a semi in the left lane and there's a semi in the right lane and the guy in the left lane is kind of just barely creeping by the guy in the right lane, who's maybe doing 57 miles an hour and the other semi is going maybe 62 miles an hour trying to get around him. The reason is because if he goes any faster, he's going to lose his job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he has to drive within these parameters, mm-hmm. you know, and that's it. And they've already beta tested it with commercial drivers and they're going to do it to us. They've already embedded the stuff in the cars. I've written a couple of articles about, for example, what they call advanced driver assistance technology. And I love how they always call it assistance. And assistance is synonymous with control. Yeah. It's about control. You. It's not about assisting you. I don't need assistance to know what the speed limit is or how fast I'm driving. But what the system does, advanced speed limit assistance technology, is that it correlates the speed that you're driving with the posted speed limit on the road. And the car knows that you're driving faster than the speed limit. And then a little icon flashes in the dashboard for now, just saying, oh, look, you're speeding. But in Europe, it pushes back on the throttle. On the gas pedal mm-hmm. to prevent you from speeding. Now, you can still kind of push through that, meaning if you push harder on the gas, it'll override it. But the implicit point is that they have the ability to literally throttle your vehicle to prevent you from driving any faster than whatever the speed limit is on any road that you happen to be driving on in real time.
That's
and that's just one aspect of this technology.
That's right. And when you talk about them putting it on in terms of selling it like an impaired driver, that was a way that they were selling. Is this the same device they were selling before, saying we're going to mandate that everybody get a breathalyzer or something like that in order to start? Is that a part of it? Is it extended beyond that? Or have they changed?
It's definitely a component of it, though it's not merely that they want to have some sort of passive alcohol detection technology in the car, meaning that, you know, your hand, let's say, touches the gear selector, and that it has the capacity to sample your skin and somehow determine whether you have been drinking as a result of that. That's merely a facet of it, and it's the way that they're marketing and presenting it. And an aspect of it that I think is very critical to examine and to understand is that it was once the case in this country that you had to have been convicted of something before you got punished for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where I was going.
You know, like if you were pulled over because you were weaving all over the road and you had your day in court and you were convicted of drunk driving, one of the things that typically would result from that, if they allowed you to drive again, would be that you would have to have your car fitted with an interlock system, a breath interlock system that required the convicted drunk driver to show that he wasn't drunk before he could drive the car. Well, now we're all to be presumed impaired and drunk drivers without anybody having been convicted of anything, just the same, and it's all of a piece that we're now all presumptive terrorists if we wish to fly commercially.
Yeah. Well, that's the way the regulatory state works. I mean, we have regulation without representation. We have taxation without representation. And of course, their rules, they say you don't have any due process. You don't have any presumption of innocence. It's always about that. You know, prove that you don't owe me taxes. Prove this and prove that. And so that's what it's going to be about. And of course, we've also, Eric, had civil asset forfeiture where they could confiscate your car, confiscate your home, confiscate your cash, without even charging you with a crime, let alone finding you guilty. And so, yeah, this is where they operate. I just look at it from a practical standpoint. If they're going to start monitoring people for, being drunk and driving, I'm just wondering, if you're going to get a false reading because the alcohol in somebody's perfume, if they put it on a bit heavy, because there's a lot of alcohol in perfume.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah, it's a nuisance.
The scenario that I see unfolding, we use the word kill switch. I think it could potentially be the kill switch for the car industry. The more people figure this out, understand what's happening. Would you want to spend $40,000 or $50,000 on a car that effectively is under the control of someone else, some corporate entity that's spying on you constantly, that the government could shut off at any time? Probably not. And of course, I guess that's kind of what they want. But the car industry has got to. I wish they'd riddle it out, reason it out, and think to themselves, "Gee, our products are becoming increasingly unpopular, and people aren't going to want to buy them. How are we going to continue to make money?" It seems like we haven't made that connection yet.
Yeah. They need to start lobbying in favor of freedom as the gun industry does. When we look at how this is moving and how they don't want us to have any choice in all this, you got an article. It's not about saving you money. Talk about that. The fact that you have a very good example about Toyota Camrys, the non-electric version and then the hybrid version. Talk a little bit about that, what the government is forcing.
Let's set the stage. The regulatory apparatus will say that it's going to issue some new mandate, as, for example, the corporate average fuel economy requirement, in order to compel the automakers to produce more fuel-efficient cars. And implicit in that is that there aren't fuel-efficient cars already available, which, of course, is a demonstrable lie. What they're trying to do is essentially force engined cars off the market in favor of battery-powered cars. That's the real purpose of CAFE. What they've done with regard to this particular case, Camry is, I think, the best-selling family car on the market. Toyota sells something like 300,000 of these things every year. And it's currently the last car of its type that you can still get with a V6 engine. They used to be common. You used to be able to get them in Honda Accords, Hyundai Sonatas, practically any kind of a car. Well, a V6 engine is becoming kind of like a V12 engine was 20 years ago. In other words, it's an exotic power plant for the ultra-affluent. I mean, even 50,000 Mercedes and BMWs no longer come with a six-cylinder engine standard. You have to pay extra to get it. They typically come with a little 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine. And the reason for that is there's simply no way for a V6 to average close to 50 miles per gallon, which is what the latest round of CAFE mandates requires, and they go into effect in 2026. So it's so extreme that not only did Toyota have to take the V6 out of the lineup, it's no longer even just a four-cylinder engine. It's a four-cylinder hybrid engine. That's going to be the standard power plant going forward. And, on one hand, the government says, well, isn't this wonderful? This thing is going to get close to 50 miles per gallon and see how much money we save you. But they don't tell you that the thing is going to cost you $5,000 or $6,000 more to buy relative to an equivalent Camry without the hybrid technology. How long are you going to have to drive it to earn back that $5,000 or $6,000, leaving aside, okay, you've also lost the opportunity cost of that money that you had to spend up front on the car. And it also assumes you can afford, your budget is such that you can just expand your budget to afford to finance a car that's now $35,000 rather than $27,000 or $28,000. There's an incredible arrogance there. And you know, the hybrid Camry is already available for those who want the higher efficient model and are willing to pay a little extra, you know, extra money to get that. But that's never good enough for the government. For the government, good enough is something that we never get to, because if we did get to it, then the government would have to say, okay, mission accomplished. We don't need to continue to regulate you, and that will never happen. Just like with the zero COVID stuff, you know, mm-hmm. if even one person has the sniffles, we still have to have all of these policies in force.
That's right. Yeah, that's a great point that you made too, and you made that in the article. The fact that look, we've already got a Toyota hybrid as well as a six-cylinder engine, and you know, people have a choice already. It's not like you this doesn't exist. It exists. The government doesn't like consumers having a choice. They're not pro-choice. And, you know, when we go back and we talked about this for years as well, what they were going to do with the EVs and electric vehicles, and they're already talking about it. You know, their kill switch is to basically set up a way that they can suck the juice out of the car battery that you put in there when they need it for their grid. So they're going to use these EVs as a backup for their grid. And that's really going to be a kill switch for the EVs. And you get to pay extra to get an electric vehicle so they can use it as the battery for the grid. You talk about the power plant, you know, the six-cylinder power plant, but they're putting emission regulations on grid, electrical grid power plants as well. And this is new. This is something that's just happened this year. So when we look at this, they're absolutely shutting everything down. And that is the plan. That's what Biden is doing. It's not just, you know, zero emissions, is zero mobility, zero that you own, zero food, everything. They want to zero it out because they want to zero out the population and they want to zero out our freedom. It's kind of interesting too. I came across a couple of articles. I want to get your comments on this. I've seen the, in the UK, they've had the National Health System has decided that they're going to spend, £65 million in order to make electric emergency vehicles. Electric ambulances. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good luck with that. Well, we'll be there in a couple hours when we get this thing charged. They already tried this in New York. New York decided they were going to do electric snowplows. And then they ran into what you've talked about and other people talked about in the cold weather. The batteries don't last too long when they're doing really heavy work. They don't last too long. And since they need to have these snowplows do like 12-hour shifts, these things could at best get like 2 hours out of it. But that was putting a happy face on it. It's pretty amazing to see this insanity. And they're running up against some very real world opposition, whether or not people are going to oppose them. The laws of nature are going to oppose these regulatory fiats, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the truth is going to oppose them. Yeah. They've managed to get as far as they have with regard to electric vehicles because most people don't understand the electric vehicle and, you know, the limitations of the electric vehicle and of electricity as a portable storage power source and what it takes to make that work in a vehicle, in the setting of a motor vehicle. But the truth about that is getting out there. And as a result of the truth getting out there, there's beginning to be opposition to it. It's no longer like, well, you know, this is a one-for-one swap. And hey, it'll be fine. It's good for the climate, whatever. I'll be able to continue as before. I'll have a vehicle that functions essentially as before. It just happens to be electric. People are beginning to realize, no, you're going to have to accept a great diminishment in terms of your flexibility, your mobility, as well as what it's going to cost you. And as a result of that, this whole EV juggernaut is running up against a great bit of what you might call hesitancy in terms of people buying them. The things are being built because the manufacturers are under the pressure of the mandates to produce them, but it doesn't mean people have to buy them yet. You know, nobody's got a bayonet in their back telling them they have to go buy an EV. And this is setting up a dynamic where I think what's going to happen next is that the government is going to start doing whatever it has to do to eliminate the alternatives to the electric vehicle. They're already pushing non-electric vehicles essentially off the market in terms of new vehicles. But then they're going to go after the ones that we already have. They're going to try to figure out ways to make them inconvenient, if not illegal, to use. It's entirely possible that they could do things like pass a mandate requiring that gas pumps operate more slowly, for example, so that it takes you 20 minutes to put 5 gallons of gas in your car, so that there's sort of a parity there between your non-electric car and the electric car that has to sit there tethered to that pump, the charge pump for 20 minutes to get a partial charge. Or they could just use environmental regulations to say, we can't have these gas stations everywhere. We're going to close them down.
Yeah. So that gas stations, I think that'll be it. I think that's very likely, you know, because you look at all the paranoia about it. And of course, you know, some of the old gas stations, they do have to dig them up and repair the underground tanks and things like that from time to time. But look at the paranoia that they've had, you know, those little, the little sleeve that they put around the nozzle when you pump, you know, to keep the
vapor guard.
Yeah. To keep the gas from getting out of the, because we're all going to die if that happens.
Right. And, you know, they could even do something ham-fisted, like, you know, impose really heavy taxes in the name of stopping climate change on gas. Mm-hmm. You know, if gas gets to be $10 or $15 a gallon, all of a sudden an electric car looks more attractive. And I think that they are going to have to do this because their goal of getting, what is it? I think it's at least 50, if not 70% of the cars fully electric by 2030, I think is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly. That's not going to happen. We're all, you know, we're not that far away. It's almost 2024. So 6 years from now, they think that more than half and perhaps two thirds of the cars on the road are going to be electric. It's simply not going to happen. Certainly not unless they can figure out a way to get two thirds of the cars that are already in circulation out of circulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you look at making the gas more expensive and artificially inflating, and Biden's been working at that very hard from day one, you know, shutting down resources to get stuff there, but also, you know, the sanctions that he's done. And when you look at the price of gasoline, just before you came on, I was talking about how prices have gone up in the 3 years of Biden. On average, about 18% across the board, some things more than others. But the thing that went up the most was gasoline prices, up by 56%. So it's about triple what the average is for everything else. And that's by design. That's not an accident. That's not, you know, that's deliberate action by Biden to make that happen.
But David, we're supposed to be really grateful that the gas is down at, what is it, 15 cents over the last?
Yeah.
It's really, it really is remarkable. When people's memory, it's so short. You know, four years ago, gas was, what, about $2 a gallon, mm-hmm. something like that. And now we're supposed to be happy that it's only $3.20 or $3.40. I put $40 worth of gas in my old muscle car the other day, and that was enough to put half a tank into it. $40.
Wow.
$80 to fill the thing up.
Wow. Wow. I saw you doing the peel out with that.
You enjoy that?
Yeah, it was. I remember the day. I remember the day when I was in high school. I went through too many tires doing that. I finally learned my lesson. But now it's not just the tires. It's the gasoline that you, when you do the burnout, you're burning cash in two different ways. So
you know, it reminds me of the great movie Braveheart. Do you remember there's a scene where they're having the funeral, and the older guy says to the little boy, you know, they're playing outlawed tunes on outlawed pipes. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I feel that way when I lay rubber in my old muscle car.
Yeah, those are soon going to be outlawed pipes, just like they're outlawing the people rolling coal and things. You know, did you see that they're coming out? What was it? I think it was eBay. They wanted to hit them with massive fines for each and every one of those things that were sold on eBay, you know, for people to put on their trucks so they can roll coal. You know, I mean, it's a phenomenal amount. And nothing is too far or too absurd for these people. Everybody lays down and dies whenever they say it's to save the climate or the environment. Yeah. And you're talking about cherry picking the inflation numbers. I've seen this from all the way through. That's what ClimateGate was always about. ClimateGate was about cherry picking your starting points so that you can get the trend that you want. And, you know, because they go back, if you look at the Arctic cores and things like that and really have a legitimate starting point, you can see that that the Industrial Revolution is not affecting the climate any way whatsoever. So they cherry pick it to try to get the data that they want. But, you know, when you're talking about how they are manipulating this for a particular technology, I think it's interesting that in the UK, they're going to have some Paralympic games. And Toyota is going to make 3,000 vehicles available for these Paralympic games that are all going to be zero emission. 500 of them, one-sixth of them, are going to be their hydrogen fuel cell EVs, right? So you could have, you know, when you talk about, and I think this is an interesting thing because it has a lot of parallels to the pandemic MacGuffin. The climate MacGuffin is the same way in the sense that not only can you not see the data, not only are they playing games with it and all the rest of this stuff and creating a false fear campaign, but it's also that only after they create the fear campaign, there's only one approach that's going to be allowed. And so when you look at this hydrogen versus battery electric vehicle thing, I think that's very telling. because, you mm-hmm. know, we don't have time. We got to race to this solution or we're all going to die. And you can't have the hydrogen fuel cell. You got to have the battery fuel cell. And of course, we know what that's about. It's about creating dependence on the grid.
Well, the other shoe that's going to drop is that for now they allow the pretense to stand that these things are zero emissions vehicles, which of course they're not. Everything has emissions to one degree or another, particularly you're going to define carbon dioxide, an inert non-reactive gas, as an emission. The point is they're letting that, they're holding that back for now because it's useful to them for now to have this stalking horse of the EV as the vehicle for getting rid of other vehicles. But I assure you, I will make a prediction that if this thing proceeds and there's nothing available but electric vehicles by 2030, then all of a sudden they're going to find that there are emissions with those things too. And then they're going to start regulating and shutting those things down too, so that again, almost nobody except the extreme elite at the very apex of the pyramid are permitted to have personal vehicles. The key to fighting this is to understand that these people's motives are not malicious and to not engage them on their terms. Mm-hmm. Everything that they bring out, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's this climate stuff, it's malicious and disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get absolutely nowhere debating them on their terms. You have to attack them at the core of this issue, which is about they are using these things as excuses, as justifications to tyrannize people, to impoverish people, to increase their control over the population. And that's it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, just it's to shut people up. Just like if you have anything to say about, if you raise an objection about the policies of the Israeli government, for example, I'm going to touch the third rail right here. Mm-hmm. That makes you anti-Semitic. And oh, now you have to cringe because you don't want to be a Nazi, do you? You don't want to be anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they want. Or, you know, if you raise your hand and say, you know, I think it's kind of not right to deny people admission, even to consider them for admission to college on account of their race. Well, that means you're a racist, obviously, mm-hmm. and you're a member of the Klan. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will cringe and, oh, I can't say that publicly. Stop it. Enough. We have to say it. You know, if you know in your heart you're not a racist, you're not an anti-Semite, you're not in favor of pouring oil into the gutter, don't let them put that mantle over your shoulders that you're somehow a bad person for questioning them. We have got to start questioning them and demanding answers.
And I think a key part of that, you know, again, we get back to the MacGuffin, you know, and a key part of that is to, it makes me cringe when I see people coming out and saying, yeah, but this would actually be more effective in terms of cutting down CO2. It would actually have less emissions than your proposal and everything. It's like, don't fight on their battlefield, right?
Yeah.
The whole thing is a false construct. We got to get to the root of the lie. Instead of saying, well, I think, you know, you're being a little bit too harsh and we need to have a little bit more time to comply with these things and so forth and have a debate on that area, we're going to lose that debate. If we let Absolutely. Them set the terms, if we let them create this fantasy world about magic unicorn farts that are going to kill us all, we lose, right? And so you got to point out the emperor has no clothes and they have no foundation of this. By the way, you know, Travis, pull up the article there of the wooden version of Tesla's Cybertruck. The question is, okay, because it got Bill Gates wants to go around and cut down trees now after we had to pay billionaires money to plant trees whenever we committed the sin of having emissions with some activity. We would have to pay an indulgence to be able to have that emission or that energy use by having them plant trees. And after they've run this scam for a long time, now they want to go out and cut down trees and then bury them. And so is Bill Gates going to want to bury this wooden Tesla Cybertruck?
Well, meanwhile, how many millions of tons of carbon dioxide did the recent launch of the mega rocket produce? That's
yeah.
okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it is kind of funny, though, because in a way, I've seen people criticize, you got automotive engineers who design body styles, and they said, well, this is obviously designed by an amateur because all these panels are dead straight and flat,
yep.
and that's going to be impossible to get a good fit. It's going to be really difficult to manufacture. That's why they don't have flat panels on this thing. But, you know, if you're going to do it in wood, maybe that works to have.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can definitely form it more readily. You know, it's amazing with regard to the Cybertruck that they didn't learn the lesson from DeLorean. DeLorean also tried to make stainless steel bodied vehicles. And, you know, the idea was, well, you have a stainless steel body, it won't rust, you don't have to paint it, which is true. The problem is stainless steel is extraordinarily difficult to form, particularly in round type forms. You know, it's fine to have right angles and things like that. But that's the problem that Tesla has with the Cybertruck. You know, it's 40 years after the DeLorean, and this still the manufacturing process is necessary to take stainless steel and make a curved fender, let's say, you know, and make tolerances what people expect in new cars. You're not going to do that with stainless steel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that if I remember correctly, I think there was a lot of complaints at the time when the DeLorean came out. People were complaining about how difficult it was. That it showed fingerprints and all this other kind of stuff. Yeah. It was a real hassle to try to keep this thing looking good, because if you touched it, you got all kinds of fingerprints left on the body there. It's kind of, but I think that Elon Musk does admire that he did gullwing doors on one of his vehicles, right? Yeah. So, you know, yeah, gullwing doors. And so he's pulling back bits and pieces of it. I think he maybe, you know, saw TV pictures of this thing and never really investigated the practical aspects of the DeLoreans, which I like. I mean, we came here 1 year and Pigeon Forge, they had a convention of DeLoreans and it was pretty cool.
You were telling me. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty cool to see all these things. I'd never seen one up close and personal, and they were all over the place. But, you know, I think he's looked at it from afar and tried to incorporate aspects of it because everybody looks at it and thinks, you know, what a cool, innovative thing. And so it's got that sizzle that's there, but maybe not a practical aspect to it.
Well, the thing that infuriates me about it, you know, if he were just an entrepreneur like DeLorean was, and, you know, offering this vehicle for sale, fine. Let people who want it, let them buy it. That's fine with me. But here we have yet another one of these battery powered atrocities for the uber ultra rich. This thing is a six figure vehicle. So once again, the average person is having a pie thrown in their face. You know, this is for the people who are able to afford it. And people like you are going to be driven out of being able to drive cars by these smug, smarmy, virtue signaling elite people who prance and preen and talk about how green they are while they're driving these six-figure, overpowered, overweight, gratuitously energy-consumptive electric vehicles that suck as much energy as a V8 muscle car. It's just a different form, and expect you and I to subsidize it. It's as outrageous as me somehow leveraging the government to make you subsidize the purchase of my Trans Am and the gas that it burns. It's beyond insufferable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This article is going around talking about how, the 1% rich with their private jets and all the rest of the stuff are using, or generating as much CO2 or carbon or whatever you want to call it, as 66% of the rest of the population. Again, this is going back to, it's good to point out their hypocrisy by their own standard of measurement, but it's also important when we cover stories like this to point out, and oh, by the way, nobody should care about how much CO2 anybody uses.
Yeah. Right. You know, I said years ago, this is some inside baseball. You remember when the cheating scandal broke with Volkswagen over the emission certification tests and their TDI engines?
Oh, yeah. And I talked about that a lot. Yeah.
I pleaded with some people that I know in the company, guys, you should put some money toward explaining to people what's going on here and demand that the government produce evidence of actual harm caused, not contest, oh, you cheated on the certification tests, as if somehow that means somebody was harmed. So what? Who cares? That, you know, that's like saying I cheated by not buckling up for safety when I went out for a drive this morning. Mm-hmm. You know, I really think one of the keys to solving this problem is when some activist or politician or regulatory bureaucrat comes out with a proposal, demands that X, Y, or Z be done, that in the first place, it be established as fact that there is a need for this because there is a harm, actual human beings being harmed, not people's feelings being hurt, you know, not some rule being affronted, but that there is an actual harm. And then whatever the solution is should be proportionate in cost and imposition to whatever the harm is. Mm-hmm. It's insane to harm a population of 330 million people over a hypothetical that, you know, it was a single human being put forward as was there any proof adduced that even one person was harmed by Volkswagen's TDI diesels? And the answer is no.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And how many people have been harmed by denying the access to a vehicle that you could have bought for $22,000 that had a 700 mile range and got 50 miles per gallon? That's a real harm. We've been denied that. All of those great Volkswagen diesels are no longer available because they cheated on emission certification tests.
And I remember when that was happening and you and I talked about this and we said, look, you know, we've had situations with the Pintos where they cut corners and people died. And they said, well, it's going to be easier for us to pay off these people who died than it is for us to make this change. And it's a clear mercenary calculation that caused people to die. And you look at, you know, that was a lot of attention drawn to that. But you look at the penalty that they paid, that Ford paid for that. It was nothing compared to what they did to VW. And you look at the airbags, the Takata airbags. We talked about that as well. And you know, this is something that killed, you know, about a dozen people. Well, actually, I think about 18 or something like that now. And yet they didn't get that kind of treatment as Volkswagen did. Volkswagen supposedly, quote unquote, cheated on it. Well, you know, from one standpoint, everybody cheats on this. They adjust the shifting points on the automatic.
Oh, they do it all the time.
Yeah, they mess up your transmission. I'm sorry?
They tune their vehicles to meet the test, and yes. This happens all the time in the car industry. And typically when it happens and the government finds out about it, what they might do is require that the manufacturer make some change. They never in the past, not ever, did they arrest and frog march an executive in chains before a judge and charge them criminally. This was the first time that ever happened. Mm-hmm. And it happened for a reason. And it happened because of the timing. If you go back to 2015 or so, that was when this electric vehicle push really began to get on ahead of steam. And they understood that the TDI diesels that Volkswagen was selling for $22,000 to $24,000 presented an existential threat to this agenda. Mm-hmm. It would have been extraordinarily difficult to try to tell people, hey, buy a $50,000 Tesla with a 280-mile range that you'll have to sit at a fast charger and wait an hour to get a partial charge back into. Or you could drive this $22,000 Jetta for 700 miles and refill the thing in 5 minutes and be back on. I mean, nobody's going to do that. I mean, in any meaningful way. So they had to get rid of these sensible, affordable alternatives to the electric vehicle. And Volkswagen was the biggest offender in that regard. And that's why those vehicles had to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you look at the way that they turned them. It's kind of like when I saw that happening, it reminded me of what happened with Bill Gates, who lied and cheated and stole his way into essentially a monopoly. And they came after him for antitrust violations, which clearly he had violated those things. And you remember seeing him as he's being deposed, doing his deposition, and he's rocking back and forth in his chair, you know, and they didn't make any major issues with it. But ever since that point in time, Microsoft has been wedded to the surveillance state, to DARPA and all the rest of them. They run NewsGuard and ElectionGuard and everything. They run all that through Microsoft. Microsoft is going to be running their Coalition for Content Provenance and Authentication, which is going to put an ID on everything that you or I do and allow them to shut it down before it even gets posted. And so, you know, they've owned Microsoft because of that. And they did the same thing with Volkswagen. They were able to put the fear of government in these guys. And now, Volkswagen is out there, you know, taking the lead and all these EV things. And, you know, they dropped all the diesel stuff and then took the lead really in EV stuff. They know how to turn people around. It's amazing how they can do that.
Oh, they do. And, you know, another example, after the near bankruptcy and the actual bankruptcy of Ford and General Motors back in 2008, 2009, the government came in and saved the day, rescued them from bankruptcy, provided lots of government money with lots of government strings. And it's not accidental that after that point, General Motors became Government Motors and mm-hmm. did exactly what the government wants and became, in effect, indistinguishable from the government. You know, these corporations now used to be sort of a separate thing, and here was the government, and they were kind of at loggerheads sometimes, and they would fight with each other. Now they're partnered with each other. They're both trying to do the same thing, and we're the targets of this effort.
Yes. You know, I look to see what is happening frequently in the UK, because they really are a couple of steps ahead of us. And we're both going down the same World Economic Forum agenda, but they're doing it more rapidly. You know, they're banning cars in many different cities. They've done that. They've got their ultra low emission zones. They even charge, if you've got a diesel car, they hit them so much, they will put a fee on you even if you park it and you're not driving it. And so we see all this crazy stuff that's happening there. The Daily Mail had an article that was about 24 pages long, talking about all the different types of speed cameras, kind of giving people a heads up warning on it. And they've got these ultra speed cameras are now being chopped down by vigilantes. And so these people actually going out and sawing down the pole that this thing is on. These people are, they're getting so angry about this. And of course, we've seen this with the ULEZ, the ultra low emission zone things that Sadiq Khan put up to, you know, if you come into my area with a car that is not a zero emission car. We're going to charge you like $12 or $15 a day. And so you had a lot of these people going around, you know, like vigilantes taking this stuff down. Some of them got caught because they weren't even trying to hide their identity, and they've got cameras everywhere. But at least, you know, they're there. At least they're fighting back. That puts me on a list, I guess, for saying that, but that's fine. That's the way I feel. At least these people are fighting back and destroying this. They take the cameras, they take a pole sometimes, and they just point it at the sky, you know, and just push it up. They don't destroy it. They just reposition it so it can't see what's on the ground.
Well, one man's vigilante is another man's freedom fighter.
That's, you know, right.
I mean, what was Robin Hood? You know, they put our backs to the wall. They leave us essentially no choice. You know, H.L. Mencken, who I've admired since I was in high school, said that, you know, a point comes when you have to spit on your hands and hoist the black flag. You know, they've effectively turned us into criminals, so we might as well embrace it and just proceed accordingly. It's awful to have to say that, but it's the truth. You know, you can't, honest, decent people can't be honest and decent anymore. You can't function because your honesty and decency will be used against you. And don't let them make you feel bad about doing the right thing because they say it's illegal, mm-hmm. you know, because they're trying to use their apparatus to punish you for things that involve no harm to anybody. These cameras are outrageous. All of this stuff is outrageous, and it needs to be pulled out root and branch and thrown into a bonfire. It's high time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they pretty much did that. That thing was up on a metal pole, and they cut it down with an angle grinder. And then,
affordable, yeah. It's great. You know, they've got all the equipment and tools. You know, they come out there and they have at it. I sometimes make myself a cup of coffee and watch those videos to make myself feel better.
That's right. They're also removing the bollards that they've set up, you know, for their 15-minute cities to prohibit you from traveling into certain zones. The people are going out and taking this stuff down. And so,
I'll tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's something else I think that's going to happen that's related to this, and you're probably following this as well, the way these insurance companies now are jacking up people's premiums to the point of unaffordability. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's home insurance or car insurance or whatever it is that you're obliged to buy because of government fiat, because the government and the insurance companies are in bed together. And I think at a point's going to come where people are going to say, you know, if my choice is to stop driving or to not eat and pay insurance, I think I'm just going to stop having insurance and drive and eat. I'm going to stop paying it. There's going to be mass refusal to go along with this anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really pushing people to the point where it's no longer just, well, this is annoying and I don't like this. This is becoming an existential question for a lot of people. Just like with cars, if they take away your non-electric car, particularly if you live out in the country as I do and you do, they're telling you effectively, you know, you're going to be stranded. You're not going to be able to go anywhere because you don't have an EV, and an EV isn't practical. They're not just saying you're not going to have a car. They're saying you're not going to have your house in the country or your suburbs even.
Definitely.
You know, you're pushed to living in some kind of an apartment or whatever inside their 15-minute freedom cities. This is an existential threat.
It really
I think
is.
Once people begin to understand that, you know, they're gonna come to grips with their innate desire that most non-psychotic people have. I'm not looking for a fight. I'm not trying to get into a fight, but if you keep on pushing me and you keep on hitting me, I'm going to defend myself.
Yeah. And where the rubber meets the road is really going to be at the local level, you know, and local and state government. That's where we can stop this stuff. It can become worse, as we saw in 2020, or you can make it better at that level. And a good example of this, I'd like to point back to, is this pistol brace thing done, executive order gun control, like Trump set the precedent with the bump stock. And so then Biden does it with a pistol brace. But of course, Trump tried to do that in his administration with a pistol brace as well, started it in 2019 and then ended it in 2020. And then Biden immediately brought it back. But here, the way they handled it here, Eric, in Tennessee, was I talked to a Tennessee state senator, and he said that Senator Nicely, he said, well, we got that taken care of. He said, first of all, we passed a law that says that if something is legal here in Tennessee, they can't make it illegal at the federal level, and we're not going to help them to enforce any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And then we said, and oh, by the way, pistol braces are legal. So even while these guys are wrestling with this thing and court challenges back and forth, and let's take it to this level of the court challenge and so forth, they'd already cut this thing off at the, you know, where the rubber meets the road. At the local level, in this particular case, at the state level. But you can do that kind of stuff at the local level as well. And so you can have sheriffs that are going to stand the gap and not going to enforce the governor's rules about masks and things like that. Or they can get real horsey and they can be worse about it. You know, it makes a big difference. I tell people we got the whole political concerns upside down. We need to understand that these people in Washington are trying to destroy our lives. But the way that we can fight back, it's really at the local level, don't you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I'll preface what I'm about to say with what Groucho Marx once said about not wanting to join a club that would have him as a member.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is I am loath to consider running for office, but I've actually been thinking about running locally for school board. Mm-hmm. And with on the motto, vote for Eric and he'll leave you alone and won't take your money. And you know, this is, as you say, this is the sort of thing that we need to do. Minimally, even if someone like myself stands little, if any, chance of actually getting elected, by making the run, you at least get the alternative point of view out there. And it's no longer this uniparty dynamic between the red sheep and the blue sheep, and they're both in agreement on the fundamentals. Let's have something different for a change. Let's actually talk about not less taxes, but no taxes. Let's talk about leaving people alone, period. Not only leaving them alone here, but interfering with them there, because you're on this side of the political aisle and you think it's okay to interfere with people in this way, but the other side thinks it's okay to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Let's get away from that. Let's get back to just voluntarism. And if somebody's not causing harm to anybody, leave them be.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is ultimately the long-term goal. And if I have to run for school board, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my contribution, if I, you know, such as it is.
Well, yeah, and you might be able to actually participate, and they might still have debates there. You know, when you look at what is happening with the debates, and I was involved with third parties and tried to, you know, we had ballot access for the LP that we would get on, you know, in mm-hmm. North Carolina. But even after all this, it's like Sisyphus, you know, rolling the rock up the hill every 2 to 4 years, but even after you get on the ballot, they would find some way to keep you out of the debate. They didn't want to have the debate. And now we see this happening with Trump. We see it happening with Biden. They don't want to debate anybody. It's pretty obvious why Trump and Biden don't want to debate anybody, because it's not, they don't want to make any of this stuff about any issues. It's got to be about them personally. And you know, so, you know, the other guy, you hate that other guy, don't you? Well, you don't hate me as much as you hate him. But let's not talk about the issues, because really on the existential issues, there isn't any difference between them. So why have a debate about that when that would just show that they're on the same page?
Absolutely. Exactly. And I think we can have a great deal of impact and influence at the local level. We take back our communities. And if we take back our communities, we take back our states, and we can take back our country in time. Okay. You know, the authoritarians didn't succeed overnight. It took them generations to make the gains that they made. And it may take us that amount of time to make them back.
I agree. And we have to understand, and the reason that we talk about what is happening globally, while we talk about what is happening in Washington, isn't because we can do anything about it. We can't. As a matter of fact, I had the guy who... he wrote the book, The Tuttle Twins, series, yeah. And he's out of Utah. And he said he was in politics, and he helped to get Mike Lee elected. And he says, I don't, you know, criticize him for what he's done or hasn't done, because you really can't get much done even as a senator. And he said, I found that we've spent all of our effort trying to fix things in Washington, where we have the least amount of impact and leverage. And then we focus on the presidency, where we have absolutely zero impact on that. But he said he started getting involved in state politics, and he was able to get a whole bunch of different laws passed that were going to make things freer for people in Utah. So that's why, you know, when we look at that, it's important to keep that in mind and understand that, as the liberals have always said, you know, I've always heard all my life, you know, Tip O'Neill, another Democrat, said, all politics is local. That's yep. where it really happens. And you would hear the people pushing for world government would always say, think globally, act locally. All the greenies and all the rest of the commies would all do this. And that's what we need. We need to understand what their global agenda is. We need to understand the directions that they're coming after us, what the end game is with all this stuff. And then we need to fight them locally. That's where we got to fight them locally, each and every one of these agendas.
We can even fight them at a lower level. And that's not exactly the right word. Excuse me. I've had too much coffee this morning. But, you know, at the family level, I had a discussion earlier today with a friend of mine who was telling me about he's training his daughter how to drive, helping her learn how to drive. And he encouraged her to use her eyes and her brain rather than be a mindless automaton that just follows the rules. So at a red light, if it's safe to go, it's okay to go. And if the law says don't go, it's still safe to go, mm-hmm. irrespective of the law. In fact, it's safer, because if you become a rule-following automaton, you might decide, well, the light's green, I can go, as opposed to looking to see whether somebody's about to run that light.
That's
and
right.
run right. Use your brain, learn to think. You know, it's empowering. And the more people that are taught to think, the more empowered they become, the less fearful they become. This is really important. You know, these authoritarians depend on fear. They want you to think that I have to wait to be told what to do by somebody who knows what to do, by an authority figure, as opposed to, you know, let's evaluate the facts. Let's look at what's going on. What's the situation? And let's decide what the right and prudent course of action is on our own. Use our own judgment. We do that, and we find that we have less and less need for these authoritarian know-it-all busybodies.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's interesting, you know, to go to foreign countries, especially third world countries, but even, some places like France, where you look at roundabouts and they don't have lanes defined. And you know, you look at the Arch of Triumph and everything, and all these people are zipping around there, and there's no lanes. Everybody's going to be on the lookout for what they're going to do, you know. And if you go back and you look at old videos of, let's say, the 1940s or something like that, you know, in L.A., and there's no lanes anywhere. Everybody's just kind of doing their own thing, kind of like it still is in France in some places and other things like that. We have these little lanes and lines and lights that are set up and signs that are set up, and we think that if we follow this precisely that we're going to be safe, when in reality we're not. You know, if you didn't have these, my dad got T-boned and would have been seriously injured, except he didn't have his seatbelt on. It's a bench seat Cadillac, and it totaled the Cadillac, came in on the driver's side, knocked him across the car. Fortunately, he wasn't trapped in there. But, you know, it was somebody who ran a stop sign at a high speed and, you know, some back roads and everything. Well, imagine if you didn't have stop signs anywhere, and every time you saw an intersection there, you would, be on the lookout for somebody that's coming your way instead of thinking, I've got the right of way, you know?
There's a facet of this too that relates, and that is the insipidity of it. You know, they use these terms like assistance that we were talking about earlier, and that's insulting. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need assistance. I'm competent. I can handle things. Mm-hmm. It's as if you're somebody who's perfectly capable of walking, and they present you with a walker or a wheelchair because you're in need of assistance, as opposed to being an able-bodied person who can walk. You know, I'm a person who's perfectly competent to drive a vehicle. I don't need steering assist. I don't need brake assist and all these other forms of assistance. Stop trying to parent me. Stop treating me as if I'm an idiot. Yeah, I can deal with these things on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. When we look at what is happening too, you know, there's the deliberate neglect of our real infrastructure. An example of this, I don't know what the figure is here in the United States, but they had said in the UK, 451 people have been seriously injured or killed by incidents involving potholes in just the period from 2018 to 2022. Because they don't fix these things, right? I mean, you see videos, even Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I can't stand any of his politics. You know, he's going out there virtue signaling because it's like, okay, I've had enough of this. We're going to fix the pothole ourselves. And you know, you see these vigilante pothole fixers from time to time. Kind of reminds me of Brazil, where, you know, Robert De Niro is the guy going out and fixing the air conditioning things because nobody can get the government that's got a monopoly to actually do it. And so people go out there and fix this stuff, and the government will get very upset in places like California if you go out and you patch the road yourself.
You know, and there's something about that we should talk about. These electric vehicles, because of their weight, that pothole problem even worse. A typical EV weighs about 4,500 pounds. And some of the trucks weigh 6,000 pounds and more. So you can imagine the effect on the road over time if lots of these vehicles are out there pounding on those roads. And we're all going to pay for that in the form of these gaping potholes that will swallow your entire car whole.
They're going to have to they're talking about redesigning the parking garages as well, because so much more weight. They didn't design it for that. It truly is amazing. And, you know, but they don't care. It's full speed forward. We don't care. We're going to do this at warp speed. It's always, as I said, it's a MacGuffin. You got this crisis. You got to act now. There is no time to get it right or to test it to see if it works. We got to go with this technology or this injection, and we're all going to die. And just shut up. And if you're in the way, you're a problem. You're a terrorist. We see this rolling out over and over again.
Even when the evidence is to the contrary. You know, if we assume that there is a climate crisis, let's just, for the sake of discussion, assume there's a climate crisis and it's caused by motor vehicles and by carbon dioxide emissions. Well, if that's the case, then why are they allowing, I should say, these gratuitously energy consumptive 6,000 pound EVs? Wouldn't you think if there's a crisis, we're all going to die, there's a crisis, that the The only allowable EVs would be minimalist EVs, the most basic, lightest, most energy efficient, least power consumptive vehicles, just whatever was minimally necessary to transport you from A to B. And the reason that they don't do that, of course, is because the affluent virtue signalers would never want to be caught dead driving a car like that. They want to drive around in their you know, ludicrous speed, ultra exotic, ultra luxurious electric car. They don't want to drive around in the electric equivalent of a Soviet era Trabant. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it just gives the lie to all of this nonsense. If there were a crisis, this would not be what's happening. So we know that their motives are disingenuous, dishonest, and malicious.
And we know that, you know, these are going to be the cars that the stakeholders will drive, that the private public partnership will drive, and so you know they're setting this up so that only the elite will have cars. That's another part of it as well. As you're pointing out, they don't want to drive it themselves, but they don't want you to have anything. But they're going to have their cars, just like they'll have their private jets and their yachts and all the rest of this stuff. It is amazing, and you know, when we talk about people even being killed by potholes. Yesterday, they had an article from the World Economic Forum talking about a day of remembrance for road traffic victims. And then, as if that's not enough, because they've got the Vision Zero that they've been using as part of their 2030 agenda, yeah, and smart city agenda, we're going to have zero traffic deaths. And of course, the way you're going to do that's have zero cars, or they're going to be traveling at zero speed, which means you're not going to drive them anywhere. But, you know, their Vision Zero thing. But then they take it to this direction, Eric. They say how a global road safety crisis harms women's rights.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
Years ago, they had National Lampoon had a joke headline, and it said, "End of the world tomorrow, women and minorities hardest hit."
It'd be funny if it weren't true.
Yeah, this headline is literally saying the same thing. First of all, you know, let's a day of remembrance to go to war with cars because they're killing everybody, and then it's killing women worse.
It's a little too early to drink, isn't it?
There's never any end to it. Well, you know, what else have you got at ericpetersautos.com? We talked about the safety and the fact that it's not actually saving you any money. You talked about the end of the, there's one vehicle that's left, the last six-cylinder that's standing. You got to remember
Camry.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you know, that gets into what we've been talking about, the way the regulations are being used to force the V6 engine off of the market. But there's something else, if I could, I'd like to just shift a little bit, because I know time is short, that ties into this electric vehicle thing, which is the CBDC thing.
Yes.
You can't pay cash at a fast charger. You know, this is something that people should be aware of. In order to use these fast chargers, you have to use digital money. Typically, you have to have a credit card that's tied to an app on your phone. And if you don't have that, you won't be able to charge your EV. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a piece with the way at many supermarkets and other kinds of retail establishments, they have winnowed down the cash registers that accept cash to almost nil. And they're trying to cajole and push you into using this digitized electronic currency. You know, and that's telling. And again, it's another mechanism by which the electric vehicle is going to control you. You know, they're going to know whether you bought electricity, how much electricity you bought, and more to the point, whether you're allowed to buy electricity at these fast chargers.
That's right.
Really important for people to understand that.
And it's always been about control. It's always been about that. We got to have, you know, you can't have a hydrogen electric vehicle. We're not going to work on that technology. We're going to say that's not allowed because we got to have something that's going to only be chargeable off of the centrally controlled electric grid. Yep. And now we're going to have the centrally controlled finances that are out there, and people are getting banned by the thousands now in the UK. That's another place where they're slightly ahead of us. It's happening here. I mean, I got kicked off of PayPal and Venmo after 5 months on there, but you know, they're doing the debanking thing and they're ramping that up. It is a ever tightening noose. That's why we have to work on how we can get outside of their system that they plan. And you have to know what system they're planning and how they're going to shut things down so that you can make plans to exist otherwise. You know, if they're going to shut down all your banking system, well, then you need to figure out how you're going to operate on a cash or gold or silver basis with people. That's the key thing, to understand where they're coming at you.
Yeah, well, and one thing that you can do right now, and it may seem facile on the individual level, but use cash. Insist on it.
Yes. Yeah.
If a merchant will not accept other than cash, then don't do business with that business.
That's right.
And the more of us do it, just as if more of us refuse to wear the mask and didn't take the jab, that can have an effect as it scales. But, you know, it starts with you and me and every other person out there. Stop being gulled by the convenience of electronic transactions. I understand it's a little more difficult to pull out a piece of paper from your wallet and pay for the coins as opposed to swiping your card, but it's really important to not let them get control of our money. If they get control of our money, they control everything.
And it'll actually help you, keep you from going into credit card debt too.
That's a really, right. If you have $100 in your wallet, that's all you can spend. You can't spend more than that. If you have a card, you can outspend what you're able to pay.
You know, Piers Corbin, I interviewed him. He was in the UK and he had that video that went viral where he goes into an Aldi's and they said, no, we're on cashless now. And so to make a point, you know, he gets some strawberries and he leaves the cash there and they say, you can't do that, you know, and they call the police on him. There wasn't anything. He's paid them, you know, and I don't know what the situation is in the UK, but here in the US, if you really got to have something or you really want to make the point, it says on there legal tender for all, you know, things. And so you got the law on your side with that. If you really want to press it with these people, you can. And, you know, if you got the cash money, they got to take the cash money. That's all. That's what it's really about. Well, always great talking to you, Eric. EPautos.com. To find out what is happening with mobility, and that is tied to our liberty in such an important way. And before we close, let me thank Angry Tiger. Good to see you there. Knights of the Storm, and of course, Tiger and Snake Report. Thank you very much for the tip. And Dystopian Dissident, thank you as well. He thanks us, but we thank you. Thank you so much for that, and thank you, Eric.
Thanks for having me on, dude.
Thanks. Take care.
Okay.
Let me tell you, the David Knight Show. You can listen to with your ears. You can even watch it by using your eyes. In fact, if you can hear me, that means you're listening to the David Knight Show right now. Yeah, good job. And you want to know something else? You can find all the links to everywhere to watch or listen to the show at thedavidknightshow.com. That's a website.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.